but in here it's been a lot of fun after that. And well, the title, these metaphysical deductions and assumptions, it was really to scare away people who looked down metaphysics and to select a given audience. I won't be speaking so much about metaphysics here, but let's see. It's more or less what I will speaking about is related to the following question. What physical object can lie behind the wave function? So the point about this metaphysics or philosophy is that I think that I like physical theories where you have intuitive physical concept. And specifically, what I mean with intuitive physical concept, by concept, like, I don't know, the body or mass point, in the body in the technical sense of quantum mechanics, or just force, position, no, temperature, and so on. You can have fields of different kinds. If you just have a mathematical framework which you know how to use to deduce data, mud data in your experiments, that's not a physical theory. It's mostly like a framework of a mathematics for some phenomenology. So what I think we need, at least I feel the need, or try to find some physical model behind this mathematical object. And so this question is a bit fuzzy, of course. It's not, you can discuss on the term physical object and so on. So what I would like to do is try to mathematize this, and then an answer, or a partial answer, which is the following, that this physical object it must have an infinite number of degrees of freedom. Let's say also a classical physical object. So this object behind the wave function must have an infinite number of degrees of freedom, which means that it must be a sort of field-like object. And so this will be a sort of mathematical result. And I suppose some people will find this trivial. And I myself, that's trivial. Like Bohmian mechanics know this all along, because they know that without the pilot wave, they can't get all the physical phenomenology which you have in quantum mechanics. And I suppose other people who work with quantum mechanics know that if there is something physical behind it, it must have a huge amount of degrees of freedom. And if you ask like these books, of course, they will tell you this object encodes information about your system. And I agree with that. But then I always wonder, like, what kind of physical object do you imagine behind this, if you imagine something? Some people imagine just particles, and that's the point. You can't have just particles as physical object behind this. And actually, what you can prove, indeed, is that this field-like object must have some sort of must be mathematically isomorphic somehow with this function. That does not mean, so people who treat this as a real thing, they would say, aha, okay, so you're proving that this is a real thing, which is not the case. It can be both a real thing and an informational thing. And again, Bohmian mechanicists know that because they know that to this wave function, Bohmian mechanics corresponds to two objects. One is the pilot wave, and the other one is the plausibility distribution for the position of the particles. But they happen to be constrained to one another. So when you look at from the eyes of quantum mechanics, you get just one object. In any case, trivial or not, this, so to speak, this formal goal for the seminar, it's not a principal one. And what I would like, what is my real purpose, is to present a so-called statistical model framework, which many of you will know with the name of convex framework or RP framework. So this is the same, more or less the same thing. And I will use this to try to mathematize this question to get this mathematical answer. And within this framework, I will present some a new theorem, which is really a theorem of convex geometry, and then make some remarks. So my real purpose is to speak about this and try to convince you that of its relevance, not only for the mechanics, but also in other theories like general relativity or apart from statistical mechanics and so on. So let's begin to speaking about this statistical model framework. As I told you, perhaps you have heard about it under the names RP framework or convex framework, or also with the name of generalized probability theory. And this name, I think, is uninformative because what's RMP? And this is a little bit misinformative because convex geometry is important in it, but it's not the whole story. And this is misinformative, I think it's actually wrong because you can show that this framework is really just a part of plausibility theory. And by plausibility, I mean just probability. But since I'm not a frequencist, I call it plausibility, so I'm sure nobody thinks about frequencies when I speak about it. So this is just a part of classical probability theory. So it is not a generalized probability theory. And this framework was developed in the, you can find it quite clearly in the work of Mielnik. It's around the 60s or the end of the 60s and the 70s. And the work of Foulis and Randall around the 70s. They done the foundations. And then Holevo, at the end of the 70s, I can say also 80s, systematize it and put in a fine mathematical form and derive the main theorems of this. Then there are at least, I don't know, 50 more people who have contributed to this. And to mention it also Luce and Hardy, which presented it with the bare mathematical bones of, so in the simplest mathematical way possible. Which is useful because since that paper of Hardy, this framework has been spreading. So it's now used more and more, especially in also in quantum information. And I think also Hardy's presentation may have some pedagogical advantages because I think this framework could be used to teach like quantum mechanics to undergraduates and make less heavy the jump from classical to quantum physics. So what is this framework about? One can make an analogy with the communication theory. Communication theory, of course, is not a physical theory. But we can could say it is a sort of pre-physical. If you want logical. What you have here is some abstract concepts. Like, I don't know, source, channel, output, and so on. And which have, they have no, they are not physical. You don't identify them. Them with the physical things. On the other hand, given a physical model or a phenomenological model with some physical concepts in it, what you do is you identify this abstract concept with some of the physical concepts or physical objects there. And then given a, if you are interested in some communication task, then you can say something about what kind of physical theory you can use for this communication task. Or vice versa, given a physical theory, you can say which communication task you can do with the theory. Thanks to this identification of this concept with this physical concept. And the point is that you could do this also with a completely imaginary theory. Say I have a theory with the unicorns, Donald Duck, and other unreal things like the collapse of the wave function. Then I can make, in any case, this association, and then derive, I could say to you which kind of communication task I can do in this imaginary theory. So that's why this is a pre-physical theory. And the statistical model framework lies exactly on the same thing. Indeed, I think we can draw a sort of diagram. If you have communication theory here, then here you have the statistical model framework. So there is a zone in which they overlap, and then zones in which you can use a communication theory, but it has nothing to do with this framework, and vice versa. So this framework is also a sort of pre-physical framework, which you could apply to imaginary theories. And here also you have some abstract concepts. And there are at least four of them. One is the concept of preparation. Then you have the concept of measurement, concept of outcome, and the concept of transformation. And the names are quite unfortunate because there are clear physical meanings. And that's a pity because people identify these concepts with particular physical, with particular concepts of physical theories and don't realize that this has much more generality. So I think one should change these names, but they have become standard now. That's a pity. You take a physical theory, in general, apart from the basic equation of the theory, you have constitutive equation, for example. And then you have initial or boundary conditions. And then from these, given these, you derive the motion of the system. And this must be taken, especially motion, in a generalized sense, because here we can be speaking also about general relativity. And these are conditions on your space-time, the metric, on the fields you want. And the motion represents additional specification of results about the structure of your space-time. So this is not completely a chronological concept. And moreover, this derivation can be statistical, not only deterministic. because you can be uncertain about the initial boundary condition. So you put a probability distribution on it. And then also your motions, you have possible motions with different probabilities. So with this very general picture, you have general relativity, classical physics, quantum mechanics, and so on. And what you do in this framework is to associate these abstract concepts, preparation and measurement, with these concepts here. And this outcome corresponds to the kind of motion. So what we call outcome in this framework can be a given space-time configuration. So it has, they have not even a sort of a chronological order. You don't have preparation, and then the measurement, and then the outcome. If this a specification of a space-time, you cannot have this chronological order. In any case, in the following, I will make the usual identifications. And as they are usually done when you apply this framework in quantum mechanics or classical physics, Newtonian particle mechanics, and so on, and say that a preparation corresponds to a state, a measurement corresponds to an observable, and the outcome to the result of a measurement associated with an observable. And I won't be speaking about transformations. And what's the purpose of this framework? So these three concepts I represent by propositions. S, N, and R. What I'm interested in is in the probabilities of what I call outcomes, given the specification of a given measurement and a given preparation. So once you have made the identification between these three concepts and your physical concepts, your theory allows you to write down these probabilities. Just as in communication theory, once you have identified what's your source and what's your channel and so on, you can derive the probabilities for a channel without noise for the transmission and so on. In this case also, once you have made this identification between the preparation and the states and so on, your theory allows you to derive this bunch of probabilities. And you can tell from these, you can say a lot of things about the statistical properties of your theory without referring directly to the physical concepts anymore. You can say things like, okay, but if I have two different preparations, how, and I have a given measurement, how well can I distinguish them? Or what's the best, what kind of results can I expect given a given preparation? No, step one was to identify this proposition in my theory. Step two was to derive this bunch of probabilities. And step three is to associate some mathematical objects to these propositions. Specifically to the states, the preparations, and the results. Automatically, you have an association for the measurement, too. And this mathematical object encode somehow the statistical properties of the theory or of the physical or phenomenological model. Which was this one. One can show that given having made this identification and given these probabilities, the mathematical objects which you derive are unique. And you have that. So, to your preparations, you associate points in a convex set or of a convex set. And to your results, you associate 0 to 1 valued affine forms on this convex set. And this identification is unique, so you have no other choice. And I don't know how much should I speak about convex sets and so on, how much can I give for guarantee. Basically, you can see the construction in a finite dimension. The point is the following. These propositions, which are you using, as, S, R, and M, are used inside probabilities, okay. Suppose that I have a proposition like this here. And for example, I have two other preparations, call them S1 and S2. And I suppose I'm interested in this probability and also in the probability of obtaining this result, given this measurement, and given that I am uncertain about S1 or S2. It can be the case that this probability for a given preparation is exactly equal to this, which means that knowledge of this preparation is statistically, in this case, equivalent to uncertainty between these two preparations, okay? Then just by the rules of probability theories, plus some small assumptions, you can then write this as follows. You more or less recognize it's just usual probability, the usual probability rules. So you're saying that the probability, if you know this preparation, the probability of obtaining this result is exactly the same as you were uncertain about this or this preparation, uncertain with these probabilities. Since the mathematical objects which you associate with this proposition must encode this kind of relationship, okay? So I'm uncertain, if I know this preparation, it is the same as being uncertain between these two. The mathematical objects must encode this kind of information. And you see that this is a convex combination. And what you get is that you must represent your proposition as points in a convex set. You can see it also another way. And that's the more or less how the game is done. Yeah, of course. And you can use also another logic if you want, of course. But then you get another theory. Now this is within a classical probability theory. And the point is that given your physical or phenomenological model and the probabilities, the convex set which you obtain is unique. So this convex set really represents the statistical properties of your model. And then, you know, convex set can be like, you can obtain a square, for example. This is more or less what you obtain in higher dimension, really, in a Speckenstein model. And convex set means, of course, that like this is the same thing as this, and it's the same thing as this, and it's the same thing as this. So a convex set is something which is, the properties are not related. You can stretch, dilate, rotate, and so on, and the convex properties are the same. So this is just the same convex set. On the other hand, like things like this, it's not like the same convex set. and you represented this kind of relations between your propositions. Let's write like this. That's by identifying, okay, if this is, say, my proposition S1, and this is the proposition S2. The fact that the probability is the same as a situation of uncertainty with certain weights is represented by having the point represented S3 just as a particular convex combination of S1 and S2. I suppose most of you are familiar already with this. And the results are represented by affine forms, which means that you have so an affine form is, of course, a function which, given a point of your convex set, gives you something which is a real number, in this case between 0 and 1. And the property, it's affine because it preserves convex combinations. And a useful way to represent this is just by choosing two hyperplanes in the affine space in which your convex set lives, and associating a 0 with 1 and 1 to the with the other hyperplane. And of course, what this means is that all points of the convex set which lie on this hyperplane, this form will be 0 on them. And all points which lie on 1, of course, the form will be 1 of them. And the one in the in between, for example, a point here, you see that this distance is 1/4 compared to this. So on this one. This representation is invariant. You don't need like a scalar product or a metric here. So you can stretch the whole thing, dilate and so on. And it's the information is there all the same. So what have we done here is that we have associated this with this form and this with this convex set point in such a way that applying the form on the point gives you exactly the probability in which you want to encode. So given a physical model, you have a unique convex set and the forms on it. And one can show that in all classical physical theories, what you get is a simplex. Basically, because the point for which, so the preparations for which you have no equivalence with uncertainty for other preparations are the extreme points of the set, and you can call corresponding preparations like pure preparations. So they don't correspond, they are not equivalent to uncertainty about other preparations. So that's what's special about it. And in classical physics, you have the property that these pure preparations are always distinguishable in one shot. So that leads to the fact that the convex set must be a simplex. And you know that in quantum mechanics, what you get for a two-level system is what you get is a Bloch sphere. And for higher-level system, may I have the screen down? You get something which is more complicated than this. And So it's no longer as simple as a ball. And it is that structure which leads to all the mathematical problems and which special information theory. We have the screen up again. I can show this to you. You don't see. You can pass it around. You see that the shape is quite complicated. It's a convex set, but the shape is quite complicated. This is the set of the density matrices in for a three-level system. The set is has eight dimensions. So what I show there is some three-dimensional sections of that set. And so you see that it is quite complicated. May I have the screen up again? Okay, I will write. So I was saying, classical physics, you have the simplex. Quantum physics, you have this strange convex set. And in general, you can imagine other theories. So let's call them exotic, in the sense that they are not classical. And you get other convex sets which are not simplices. One example is the Speckens. Speckens' toy model, which leads you to something which is a higher dimensional version of a square. So this is something which is not, it is not quantum, of course, but it is not classical either. And now we are getting to We are get, aha, it was that. Okay, you see, it is, you see that these are three-dimensional sections of this eight-dimensional space. And like you, for example, you can identify these states here, this circle, and this state here, they are pure states. So they are what you represent by usually by rays. For example, and you see that because of the convex structure here, you see that there is a triangle inscribed here. It means that these three states are distinguishable in one shot, which is the characteristic of a three-level system. You can distinguish three of them. And so, I don't need this any longer. So I was saying, like in Speckens' model, you have something which is a higher dimensional version of a square. And this framework is useful because you can see a lot of things just by looking at this convex structure. For example, in the case of the square, you can see that any two of the extreme points are distinguishable in one shot, but not three of them. This is because, for example, if I choose these two points, I can choose a measurement which has as a result two affine forms. One is the one which has 0, 1 and 0 here and 1 here, and the other one is at the same planes but with opposites. So I have a measurement for which I have probability 1 for one of them and 0 for the other, and vice versa. But if you like take three of them, you can see that you cannot make up a measurement with three outcomes, such that two of them are zero and the other and the remaining one has one, probability one for the outcomes. So you cannot distinguish them in one shot with one measurement. That's a good point. That's a good point. So the affine forms form a convex set. And you have that in classical and quantum mechanics, it is a physical assumption. Let's see, okay, a form like this is allowed, of course. While a form like this, if I draw something like this, of course it's not allowed. Why? Because the states here, the preparations here, would get a probability which is less than zero, because the form here assumes values which are less than zero. The values are the probabilities. So things like these are not allowed. So I have a sort of maximal allowed set of forms, which in this case, or the square, for example, are the forms which goes through the, there are four forms. Two like this with 0, 1, and 1, 0, and two like this with 0, 1, and 1, 0. Okay, so I have four maximal forms. And in classical and quantum physics, you assume that whenever a form is mathematically possible, then it corresponds, it must correspond to some physical measurement. It is an assumption here and here. It is a characteristic of Speckens' model that it doesn't assume this. It assumes more or less, making an analogy, that the maximal forms are these ones, like the 0, 1, and so in Speckens' model, like, you cannot distinguish this and this, because you would need a form which is like this. And he says this is not allowed. And this is a little variance with what we have in classical and quantum physics. And you have quite interesting properties when you don't have these maximality properties, so to speak. But in the following, I will assume that whenever I'm speaking of a theory or of a physical model, must correspond to realizable physical measurements or realizable observables. And really on this depends a theorem which I will use now to go to the answer of my initial question. So suppose you have two physical theories, or say you have a phenomenological model here, call it two. And you have a classical physical theory here, call it one. And in somehow you want to interpret the phenomenology here by using this classical physical theory. So what I would like to do is try to mathematize this. So what I can do is put this into the statistical model framework. So what I get is a sort of is a convex set as the forms meet. And here, since I have a classical theory, I will have a simplex plus the forms. And making an interpretation means that I must be able to associate to each state of this theory, a state here, of course. Which means that to each convex point here, I must associate somehow a convex set, a point of the convex set here. So I need a map between these two. And the first question is, okay, can I say something more concrete about this map? And I can. The first thing is that map has to be affine. And it has to be affine basically because the rule of the game was that you could consider all possible conjunctions of preparation and measurements. If you can do this, so you must be able to do this to go over to the convex framework. And if you can do this, then the map must be affine. Vice versa, if you can't do this, you can't use the convex framework. Or you have to change your identification of preparation and measurements. So this condition is automatically guaranteed if I'm speaking about this convex set. So I know that this map is affine. There was a paper by Montina last year which was trying to say that this, we could change this with some non-affine map, but it is really logically inconsistent. And then, since it is a map, we can take it like in, for example, in this direction. So we associate to each state or preparation of our classical theory, preparation of our model, which can be an quantum mechanics or an exotic theory. And since this must be an interpretation for this, of course, what I want is that the image of this convex set, for example, if it happens to be strictly inside the other convex set, it means that, like, this preparation here doesn't have any corresponding preparation here. Okay. So each one of these preparations must correspond to something in my classical model. So this map in this case must be on top. On the other hand, I can consider mapping the opposite direction. So to each state of my phenomenological model, I associate a state of my classical system. In this case, if it happens, for example, that two distinct states comes here to the same state, it means that my classical model cannot separate the two different statistics associated to these states of phenomenology in general. So it's not a good interpretational theory. So in this case, this map must be into distinct states here, must lead to distinct states here. And then there are two important theorems for these two possibilities. The one is by Holeavo. One thing, note that this project, so taking this theory and consider it as a sort of subset of the simplex, is if this is possible, is what Speckens call non-contextuality. And there is a theorem by Holeavo regarding this direction, which says the following. It's really a theorem of convex geometry, but you can reformulate it physically, and it says that any physical model can be interpreted as a classical theory with the constraints on the measurements. Basically, I have a classical theory, and I say that for some physical reasons, some measurements are not possible. Consider, for example, and this is what you can find in Holeavo's book, this example. Consider like a physical theory represented by a very trivial physical theory, but by a three-dimensional simplex, so it's tetrahedron. Suppose that I cannot make measurements which distinguish these states from this, like this state from this state or from this state. So I find forms which have some horizontal component are not allowed for some physical reasons. Then suddenly I cannot see this dimension. So what I see, what is the following, more or less? So these three states for me are the same because I cannot distinguish them. I have no measurements to do that. So suddenly the statistical properties of my initial classical theories get modified and I get a theory which has different statistical properties represented by this non-simplex. And the theorem is that I can do this, well, you give me a non-simplex, whatever convex set, even infinite convex set like this with infinite number of extreme points. You give me even of all possible forms are allowed, so all possible measurements are allowed. And I can always find a classical series, or a simplex, from which I can derive this by this sort of projections, which means saying that some measurements, classical measurements, are not allowed. This I can always do. And the other way, instead of thinking about it, is so here I'm excluding measurements from the classical theory. Suppose instead that I have, say, a classical theory, and what I'm saying is that, no, I'm excluding states. For some reason, some states are not physically allowed. So if I exclude these states, I get another set of states, which is no longer a simplex. And if this is possible, this theory is what Speckens called a non-contextual theory. And what he proved is that quantum mechanics is not its property. Quantum mechanics is contextual. So since I usually believe that people think quantum mechanics is so special, my principle is it is less special than we think. What I was wanted to prove is that this property of contextuality is true for any convex set. And I tried for almost a year and didn't succeed. And then I contacted convex geometry at the Royal Institute of Technology, Svante Linus, which proved the theorem. So the theorem in physical terms is the following. No non-classical theorem. Can be interpreted as a classical theory with constraints on the states. So I cannot take a classical theory and say some states are not allowed. Then I get a theory which has a statistical properties, which is not, which are like those of quantum mechanics, for example. This is not possible. And the reason is as follows. I won't prove this theorem. I just give an idea of why. Take again that example of you want to obtain your square, which is represents a non-classical theory, just excluding states from your classical theory. But consider I must get also the not only the states, but the results from my measurements. Consider the outcome represented by these two affine hyperplanes. When I go back so in this map to my when I go from this map to my classical theory, I see that this measurement is unphysical because the states here get probabilities either less than zero or bigger than one. But one may think, okay, but this is just a special case. Like this, for example, something like this. I take this classical theory and I say that only the states on this plane are physically allowed. So I get again, I cut this with a plane and I get a square. You see that, for example, if I consider this hyperplane, this line, I can embed it in a hyperplane which touch this space. Okay, so that's okay. But the other hyperplane has to be parallel. And then it has to cut your simplex here. And what the theorem says is it is a non-theorem that you can obtain any convex set by cutting a simplex. But whenever you do that, the forms on your initial convex set cannot be pulled back to forms on your simplex. So you can interpret states as classical states, but not all your measurements are classical measurements. So this means that any non-classical theory is automatically contextual. So that is not a special property of quantum mechanics. And now to the final point. So this is not possible. It is possible only in the case in which I a priori I say some forms of my exotic theory, like these ones, are not allowed. Then I have more possibilities because I don't need to pull back all the forms. And indeed, if you look at a Speckens model, it is its convex set is not a simplex, but the theory is non-contextual. And the trick is that Speckens does not allow this kind of measurement outcomes. It just starts from this. And this I can always pull back to a classical theory. But in the case of quantum mechanics, and I cannot see any other theory in which this is. You always assume that all possible forms are automatically, physically realizable. So we have to exclude this map, and we have to resort to this map, the one related to Olevo's theorem. And from this map, so if you consider the pure states of your classical theory, these points here. In a classical theory, the pure states usually are identified as what perhaps this we call the zings. So the real thing or perhaps I misinterpreted, but these are the zings and all the rest is uncertainty about the zings. Or however you want to call it. And so, given a pure state of my suffix here. Call this map, this onto map like pi. If I get the counter image of this state, I have that the counter image must contain at least one pure state of my classical theory. And the number of pure states corresponds to the dimension of the to the degrees of freedom of your classical theory. So what I have is that the dimension of the pure states of my exotic theory, call this two, and call this one, must be greater or equal to the dimension of the pure states of my classical theory. You do like, in this case, the dimension is not, this is just a number, the dimension is zero. The point is you must go to more serious theory. And take, for example, take just a two-level quantum system. So your pure states, you can put a differential manifold structure on them. And the pure states have a dimension two, because you can, they have a two-dimensional differential structure. This means that if you want to interpret this classically, you need a physical theory which has a sort of phase space of dimension greater than two or greater than two. You can't do with less degrees of freedom, not even discrete even less. So if you go to considering quantum mechanics, it is Schrodinger's equation. What are your pure states there? Your pure states is just a set of your wave function such that they are normalized, or the square is normalized. And the dimension of this thing as a differential manifold is infinite, of course. It's an infinite dimensional differential manifold. This means, by this theorem, that if you want to build up a classical theory and to interpret this by that projection in that way, then your classical theory must have the states of your classical theory must form a differential manifold which has dimension, an infinite dimension, which means you can't have particles, because then you have a finite dimensional phase space. You need fields. So your classical theory must have fields. You can't just do with particles alone. And that's what every Bohmian mechanicist know. They need the pilot wave. And this has, of course, some implications, because so the things behind this, there must be some fields behind this. And you can elaborate on this. And you see that this field has some isomorphic mathematical properties. So these things probably can have a sort of ontological, if you want to use this term, meaning. But it doesn't mean that it cannot have also an informational meaning, like it has in Bohmian mechanics. There are two things behind this. And you can't just use this information, a sort of probability distribution, and then say that the ontology behind is just particles. You can't. You need fields. James interpreted this, for example, as a sort of physical fields and derived some interesting results. Schrodinger maintained that you should interpret this also as a physical field. One thing that I want to say, this doesn't mean that automatically the collapse of the wave function becomes something physical. You don't need that. So this is more or less how you get to this. Of course, you can do all this much more rigorously within convex geometry. This was just a sort of sketch. The main point was to show how this statistical model framework is quite useful to obtain these quite general results, and also to try to mathematize things which since they are partially philosophical, they are always difficult to state in a precise term. So you need to mathematize them. And you can do that quite beautifully with this framework. And what I wanted to do some propaganda for is that these are, I think, as it could have many important applications, like in other theories, like general relativity, and apart from statistical mechanics, where it is used. So let's see. There was two questions. If the things behind the wave function is a field, then the next question is, can I interpret this differently from these operators or this observable differently from just measuring where a particle is or what the momentum is? Can they have some other physical meaning in relation to the field behind this? And that was one question. Then what I wanted to point out were some other interesting problems within this statistical model framework. For example, you have seen that your states and your observable, which in quantum mechanics corresponds to, so this S corresponds to a density matrix, and this R to a POVM element. And of course, the application of the form of the states just corresponds to the usual way you obtain probability in quantum mechanics. This framework tells you that taking scalar products between states, between these convex points, is meaningless. Because only the relation between these two are meaningless. So in quantum mechanics, often you define things instead by considering you have a matrix structure in the convex set of density matrices. And this framework tells you that can be useful, but you could derive this from a more basic thing, which reduced to a relation between these two. So what I'm really curious about, like give definitions of concepts like mutually unbiased basis or informationally complete POVMs and so on, symmetric informationally complete in a sort of convex invariant way. That would be quite interesting. So avoid this kind of operations, which are not counterpart to this. So you can interpret this, I'm sure, by jumping on to and forth from the two spaces, the one of preparation, the one of measurement. And then try to, is it possible to give generalization of these concepts to more other kind of convex sets, so other kind of phenomenological models? That would be quite interesting. And another question is like generalized entropy. For simplex, you have the Shannon entropy. For quantum mechanics, for the set of states of quantum mechanics, you have von Neumanns. What do I have for a general convex set? And I think I will finish here. The last thing I can say is that there was a question by Chris there about, you can represent states in quantum mechanics by quasi-probability distribution, and they have to be negative. Or if they are positive, then the functions which represent your POVMs has to be negative. And it is a theorem that's also that for whatever convex set you have, automatically, if it is not a simplex, then if you represent it by this kind of quasi probability distribution, they have to be negative. Or on the state side, or if they're positive there, they have to be negative on the measurement outcome side. So this also, this non-negative property is not restricted to quantum mechanics. It's true for all non-classical theories, all theories for which the state space is not a simplex. And I will finish with this. It was quite, it is a bit, I have the problem that I would like to show how this think how general it is. And then I need to use very abstract terms. And then one just gets confused because of that. So that's a point. That as soon as you use concrete terms, people immediately associate concepts here with specific concepts. And then don't see that this can be applied in more general situations. And I'm not good at that, trying to show that. That's a big problem. I made some studies about it. You can have, for example, in quantum mechanics, you can define the von Neumann entropy in this way. Let's see if I remember correctly. The von Neumann entropy of a given density matrix, okay. Let's call it S. So what you do is the following. You consider all possible measurements. So say all P of Ms. You calculate the Shannon entropy for, say, P of M E. The Shannon entropy of this P of M given your density matrix. Then you take the minimum of all these possible Shannon entropies. And that you say, that is my von Neumann entropy. So the von Neumann entropy is, in a sense, the less uncertainty you have. Or it's the maximum. No, it's the minimum. No, of course. I take just one. I can't restrict myself to the orthogonal measure, of course. Yeah, that's right. I'm taking. At least I must have at least two results. I must have at least two results, I suppose. It was, in any case, it was a sort of maximization of minimization on all P of M's. And one can think about doing it the same in a general convex. So I get a convex set, and I want to know the entropy of this. I consider all possible affine forms, and I calculate the entropy associated, and I take the minimum or the maximum. And you have results which are not, in one case, for example, you get isentropic curves, which looks like this. I do this like with a square. In one case, you get these isentropic curves, which are not fine because they are not convex. So you cannot use this entropy like in, say, in Jane's principles, so maximization of entropy principles. They're not usable. And in other cases, you can define the entropy on the other hand. What was the other definition? All right, you get a point here. You consider all possible convex combinations in respect of the pure states, which you can do. And for all these convex, since the convex combination, you have a sort of a probability distribution. You calculate the Shannon entropy, and you then take the maximum. And you get nice curves. For example, for the square, you get curves which are, they're not the circles, but they're convex. But this does not correspond to von Neumann entropy in quantum mechanics. So von Neumann entropy is something different. It's not constructed this way. So and then I didn't see more than that. So it would be nice to find a general notion of entropy and useful, like which can be used in sort of maximum entropy principles and so on. So more than this, I have not seen. I know that MacLeifer has worked. And that's come more or less to the same results.
A general convex model setting, what is the analog of a standard from the measurement?
You good?
And then you think fine.
No, that's
a problem. Because we have the standard equivalent of
if we're not gonna measure. That requires the idea of orthogonality. Don't have that.
You can't characterize von Neumann measurement as a, since the measurements from also measurement results from a convex space. Von Neumann measurements, the projections,
at the extreme points of this set. And that automatically you have also for your convex set. Among all affine forms, you have some which are maximal. Like in this case, these two forms and these two forms are maximal. You can represent it by convex, by a scalar product, and you see that if this is my convex set, the square, you can represent the set of forms as this double cone, which in this case is a tetrahedron. It's a bipyramid. And these points here are the extreme, can you call it extreme results, extreme outcomes, which corresponds in quantum mechanics to the von Neumann measurement. These are, you have, here you have, for example, the convex set of the state space of a real two-dimensional quantum mechanical system, so real Hilbert space. And you have that the set of measurement outcomes is this double cone. And the points here on the series are projectives. And they are the extreme points, except for these two. This is the zero, and the one below is the identity. So you have this association. What you don't have in all theories, and that's an important thing, is that in quantum mechanics, to each state, there is a canonical association with a given outcome. And you see it quite explicitly here. I take this state, I can associate directly this. Here, I cannot do that. So what do you, which kind of result do you want to associate with the state here on the cone? You can't associate here or here, why one or the other. You could associate here, but it's not a pure, it doesn't correspond to a von Neumann measurement. So some theories have convex structure for which this duality, the duality which in quantum mechanics is between these two objects, does not exist. And you use exactly this duality when you, like often when you calculate this. What I imagine is that by the duality, just to say this density matrix to some projector, which represents really an outcome. And then you go back. So this is can be represented as something like this by this duality. And you can't do this with all possible series. So there is a lot to study to do. I mean, there could be a sort of classification of points which can be useful to understand better quantum mechanics. You mean combining systems together? No, I don't. And that's another interesting point because it is an interesting point of also, perhaps I've gone out of time, so let me finish it. I can take privately, I don't know. Yeah.